What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 120, How to Run an Awesome Student Athletic Trainer Program, recorded December 10th, 2014. I don't know how to run an awesome student athletic trainer program, but I saw a news story on Allen ISD athletic trainers, and I said, I bet they can tell me how to do it. And of course, you know, I go to my fallback guy, Chris Shattuck. He's here from Pearland Dawson. I've got a lot of great input from Chris, and I think we do some pretty good things together, bouncing ideas off each other. And so he's here joining us. Shakira, switch to him in just a second. We're watching the live stream. So we got Chris Shattuck from Pearland Dawson. We have three of the athletic trainers from Allen ISD, or for Allen High School and Allen ISD. And then we also have two of the Masters of Athletic Training students from U of H, April and Amber, and they are both new to the show here at the school. So I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right next to me is
Jose,
Shakira,
Gabby,
Olivia,
Jess.
And Jess. And if you want to join our conversation at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, there's a link where you can register. And I see we got two people. I can't see their names from here, but there's two people watching the live stream, two people logged in there. So you can actually earn the CEUs from watching the live stream. If you want to connect, Matthew is on Twitter using hashtag TheSMB. He'll be searching for that, or he'd be tweeting to Chris's. So Chris, if you got your phone vibrating, it's Matthew tweeting to you there. Or Mary over there at Allen, if you got Twitter notifications going off, then that's all Matthew. So without much further ado, we'll go ahead and get right to it.
Mr. Shattuck, can you introduce yourself?
All right. I'm Chris Shattuck. I'm the athletic trainer at Dawson High School in Pearland. Been in the profession for 16 years. I've also had a stint at Humble High School and Bryan High Schools. Done a lot of volunteer work with Houston Marathon, Houston Rodeo, U.S. Olympic Committee, athletic sports medicine. Just anywhere I can help, I'm trying to work, trying to have a good time in this profession.
So I should have looked it up, and I know we talked to you before about the student athletic trainer program. There's a lot of stuff you do, and so let me see. I'll get somebody to look that up and find out what episode you were on with us before. But definitely a wealth of resource from Chris, and I feel like I've learned a lot. And one thing I will definitely say about Chris was I said this last time, but you've changed the way that I guess I'm perceived, because now I'm wearing khaki pants and a polo, and I bought these new jackets, so I'm not wearing a sweatshirt at school. And so I really appreciate what you've done for me professionally, even though you aren't intending it just for me. But thank you, and thank you for being here. So
thank you.
Mrs. Miller, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Marilyn Miller. I'm athletic trainer at Allen High School. This is my 17th year at Allen, and this is the only school I've been at. So it's been pretty good, great place to work and great coworkers, which they can introduce themselves to you.
I'm Mike Harrison. I've been at Allen ISD and Allen High School for 20 years. I've been in the profession for about 23 years. Was it 2 years? My first job was at Palestine ISD. And then I spent a year working medical sales with Willis Medical, who is now Henry Schein. Don't have any plans on leaving Allen ISD or Allen High School. Consider it one of the pinnacle jobs here in this area and in the state. And I've got some great coworkers to work with here.
Hi, I'm Chainer Sessian, athletic trainer here at Allen. And this is my sixth year here at Allen. It's my 12th year in the profession. I worked in a clinic for a couple of years and then was at the University of North Texas for 5 years working football and women's basketball before I made the move here to Allen, and I'm very happy to be here.
And we also have one other athletic trainer. He couldn't be here today. He's teaching classes, but we added him back in August, Chris Brock. He's teaching some of our principal of health science technologies, but we've added him as one of our staff members. We have four of us all together.
All right, so you have four. You guys are a 6A high school?
Yes.
You got four full-time athletic trainers and one of them with teaching responsibilities?
Yes. He was actually a permanent sub last year during the school year and was only doing contract work. And then we talked with him over the summer. Mike talked with him at SWATA, and we were able to add him on as one of our staff athletic trainers this fall. He already had a set teaching schedule, so we weren't able to snag him from that. But He is helping us in the gym with our morning first period athletics, as well as after school athletics with basketball. So it's worked out really good and helped us with a lot of spots that we couldn't get to because we have so much stuff going on all over campus.
And are you guys still playing football?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We're in the fifth round and hopefully making it to next week too.
Very cool. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
So, all right, we'll get right to it. Some of the topics we wanted to address.
How do you educate athletic trainers?
Who's the question directed to?
You can ask.
Mr. Shadow.
How do we educate our student athletic trainers? Well, our program is more of like an internship program. So we have proposed the sports medicine class in the past. Most of our kids, though, they come in during athletics only or before or after school. We can teach them what kind of as we're doing our job, we can teach them. So when we're evaluating an ankle or we're doing therapy on an ankle, we show them they can help us out. I wish that we did have the sports medicine class, and maybe we'll bring it up again. But it was either this year was either get the sports medicine class or get an additional athletic trainer. We chose getting the additional athletic trainer.
All right, so we have the GHATs, the Quiz Bowl, and you know I know you guys were in the championship match last year, and I know you plan to take the trophy home this year, right?
We plan on it. We're practicing right now. You know, I did not want our kids entering the Quiz Bowl last year when they did because we do that internship style that we learn while we're in the athletic training room doing our job. And these other high schools around here have the sports medicine class. So I was like, I don't know if we can compete. And they really surprised me. So we got second last year. Hopefully we can take the cup home this year.
Yeah. So that's one of the things. I mean, I want my students to be able to be in that championship round. And you know, I know you said a lot of it is they study on their own.
That was it. Last year was, I said, well, here are some things that you can study that will prepare you. They took it upon themselves to study. They're really, my group of kids right now is really self-motivated. So I just, we just kind of had a list of things that this is what you need to be studying. And they would have study sessions and get it done. And then they really, I mean, I was really surprised in the end.
All right. So again, staying with Chris, and then we'll jump over to the guys there at Allen. What do you do? Do you have any sort of like checkoff levels? Because for us, they have to be able to tape certain things in order. So they have to be able to buddy tape the fingers and then the wrist, the hand, the thumb before they can, and the ankle before they can ever earn their polo and the chance to work a varsity football game. And then we continue to teach other things. You know, obviously they have to be CPR certified before they go to practice. Do you have any sort of standards or, you need to be able to learn this or know this at this time and that kind of thing?
I don't have any, there's a definite time that you have to learn this. I will check them periodically. They practice a lot on taping or doing other things, doing therapy, helping us with, hold TheraBands or showing them how to do a straight leg raise or whatever. So we're just there, we're real close, we're monitoring them. If they're able to do it, I'll say, hey, even if they're a freshman or sophomore, can you tape this ankle for this athlete? And then that's whenever you really put them on the spot, and then it's not as good as you've been seeing in practice. But that's what, it takes time for them to kind of do that over and over again. So there's no, to answer your question, no, I don't have any really checkoffs other than I'm just watching you kind of like a hawk every time, are you doing it properly? If so, I'm confident that I can leave you over there and do that and not be watching you all the time.
All right, so we were talking briefly in the hall, and you currently have 19 student athletic trainers?
19, the most we've ever had. And I know I saw Alan's segment on the YouTube. I can't believe how many student athletic trainers they have.
All right, so then let's go over to Allen High School. Why don't y'all give us a brief background of your program, maybe tell us how it got to that size, and then we'll talk about the education, how you maintain that program.
Okay, well, we've gotten to where the last few years or so we do application program. We don't recruit anybody, but we have three middle schools and our freshman center, of course, and the high school, and we collect applications in the spring, go through those, and accept students into our program. This fall, we had 76 student trainers total. We've got 13 freshmen, 17 varsity football trainers, 32 JV football, 2 were with volleyball, 5 were with wrestling, 4 with men's and women's basketball, and 3 with men's and women's soccer. And that's what we start off with in the fall. Once we get through the football season, obviously our varsity kids stay with varsity, but our JV kids pick a second sport and have moved on to those other sports. So we basically come from a point of it's not a football program, even though that's the primary sport we cover. It's all sports, and we treat all sports equally, take care of them, and so on. It's been amazing how much it's exploded, and I honestly don't know why or how, but it has, and our kids stick around through 4 years of this, and it's been awesome. And they learn a lot. They soak it in, and they go on. You know, we've had a few kids go on to college, and to where they almost have to take a step or two backwards when they get to college because of what they've learned here. So I'll let you guys add in.
Believe it or not, back in 2004-05, we actually did go on a recruiting campaign. We were unsure about numbers, but we haven't had one since then. And the numbers, I'll give you an idea. Last year, we had 100 applications for 17 available slots that we had. So it's kind of a unique problem to have, but we're managing it per se right now, because it just really, really exploded in the last 2 years. At one time, going to courses, we did teach a sports medicine class back in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s, and it was just Mary Lynn and I here at the time, and we just started growing, and we couldn't keep up with the classroom duties and also pay attention to our athletes that needed treatment. And the way our class schedule works with athletics almost every period of the day. So what we started doing in the classroom, what we do in the athletic training period, is the first half of the semester, in the first semester, we'll do we do a pre-camp before we come in, about a 3 or 4 day camp, half a day camp, to get ready for the season. We'll start taping with wound care and bandaging, elastic bandage care, taping proficiencies, and getting most of the younger ones started with that, and the older ones reacquainted with it in more practice. And then from that point, we'll teach CPR and first aid. And then throughout the year, it's pretty much, you know, as Chris had mentioned, it's OJT. You know, you're doing an intern style program. Well, once football season's over with, and then we really get into the meat of everyone's schedule from January on to March, especially if you have wrestling, we do book work. With the kids. Che, we have a scaled down version, and Che will go with the freshmen and teach them over there just basic athletic training principles. And then over here for the 10th and 12th graders, the 10th and 11th graders, 11th graders can repeat it if they want to do it over again, but the 10th graders have to take the second level, which we use the Arnheim. It's the intermediate book of Arnheim, I believe. That we use, and we go through it, and we basically take that all the way up to spring ball, and then we work on our proficiencies throughout that time. So they are getting book work during that time. So we've kind of modified how to have the class, put in a sports medicine class. With the addition of Chris and him teaching, we're looking at adding in a sports medicine 1 and possibly sports medicine 2 next year.
So you're going to add sports medicine?
We're in the works of adding that in next year, so the kids can actually get full credit for it.
Having more of the formal setting versus just a participation setting as we have it now in the spring, only on certain days where we don't have a lot of games, to where people are gone and whatnot, going through the book, going through notes, going through anatomy, going through injuries, treatments, stuff like that, so they know what to do, what they are doing things on, and so on. Kind of like what Chris was saying as well, internship-wise, you know, they're learning, they're getting checked off on their tapings, and then once we know that they are proficient in that, then we can leave them and say, okay, I need you to go do ultrasound on him, you know, while we're doing something else, or I need you to go tape his ankle while we're taping somebody else, or whatever, that we know they can handle that and it's going to be done correctly. So.
All right, so Olivia, I'm putting you on the spot here. Olivia is one of my student athletic trainers. Can you see her on the camera, Shakira? All right, so Olivia is one of my student athletic trainers. She's a freshman. What is one of the ways that you've learned best so far in the 10, 12 weeks that you've been a student athletic trainer? What is one of some of the things that we've done that you feel like you've really learned? So is it that we make you tape 400 times, or that we keep going over CPR, or is it that you're sitting in here in class? What has helped you?
I think learning CPR and taping in the beginning, how we had to do the ball of tape, just ripping it, the whole thing, and then in class doing CPR over and over with
the mannequins.
Yeah.
So just being continually exposed to it.
Practicing taping at home.
Okay. So kind of just what both of you guys are saying is the internship is just that being there, being a hands-on, Chris said watching like a hawk, just making sure they're doing it correctly. That's kind of what you're saying. Because what we did is they had to tape, they could only tape on us one time per day, and that was their test for that day. So if they failed that, then they can move on to the next step. But if they pass that, they can move on to the next step. If they failed it, then they had to wait till the next day. And for us, it had to be perfect for the taping. And so, like you said, they're nervous when they're looking at me, or when they're taping me, and which is good, because I want me to be the hardest person they ever tape. And so I think just the fact that some of them would probably tape like 40 different times, tape my ankle or Doc's ankle. And so just having them, making them practice. And so then when they get to tape the athlete, they don't know if you're taping them right or wrong. So it's a lot easier. So. All right, there at Allen, do y'all have any sort of like check off? Like I was talking about checking off with the taping, any sort of, you need to have this knowledge or this competency to continue in our program?
Well, with our tapings to get checked off to start with, they have to show, we watch them do their tapings, kind of like you said, they do a great job 40 times, and then we watch them like to do their tests, and they freak out and can't do it. But for the most part, when they do tape, we'll give them a scale of 1 to 5, basically meaning a 5 is like one of us taping. If somebody were to come in and look at it, they can't tell between their taping and our taping, and it goes down from there. Once they hit about a 4 or 5, then we can trust them to tape others, athletes and whatnot, to go out to practice and games. So it's kind of our scale. What you guys add into that?
I mean, it's fairly, it's going to be subjective, of course. But you're looking, I mean, we're always looking for different things. Really, neatness is one. How they're actually applying the tape. Are they bruising the roll? Are they having to set it down all the time? Are they, moving around too much and not being efficient? One of the things, that's part of it. Again, going back to the neatness part of it, wrinkles, are they going to cause a blister? Or going with the ankle, are they getting the arch, the stirrup going up into the arch? And those type of things, we start counting off for that. And believe it or not, we all have different taping styles. Mary Lynn, her and I tape totally different from each other. I tape, you could go to Arnheim, and that's the way I was taught, that's the way I tape. She was taught by Dave Binder out at UNM, and there's quirks to it. So some of the kids will say, hey, if you learn it Doc's way, you tape it his way. If you learn it Coach Miller's way, learn it that way. I put my pre-rep on backwards. So, that they get on me about that. So, we'll start structuring that way, and we really watch them. I'll strip it down piece by piece and tell them, look, I'm not giving you credit for this. You're going to redo it. And I said, I'm not going to watch you, and then I'll go back over there and make them nervous and whatever else. But, each taping proficiency we have, there is small check marks, but the biggest thing is application and neatness. Are they putting the strips on correctly? Is it neat? Is it in a certain amount of time? If they're taking too long, then we're going to count off for that. And especially when we're looking for varsity student trainers, you're going to be under time. You need to be under at least 3 minutes period taping. because you don't know when you're going to have to be asked to do that out on the field and get that player back. And the other thing is comfort. I'll make the kids get up and say, okay, how does that feel? I mean, is it too tight, too loose, things of that nature as well.
All right, so do y'all have I talked to Bubba Wilson, and he said when they had when he was working at Kingwood High School, they had like a band system. So they got 10 or 12 different bands. So they had 10 or 12 different levels, like the colored wristbands, you know, the Livestrong wristbands, whatever they are. And so they had to pass certain tests and know certain skills to level up. And, you know, those levels equated to different rewards or responsibilities. Do y'all have any sort of thing like that? Because I know in the news segment, it said that they had to be able to tape at a level 4 or 5 in under 3 minutes, which is what you just said. But are there other minimum requirements that you have for those kids to work varsity?
Yes. I mean, we put together a whole, when this program exploded and to really decide, I mean, we just couldn't arbitrarily say, okay, it's going to be this one because we think here and here. We really had to go back and reevaluate the program and put some proficiencies in place. One was our tapings, how they did. We told them, we said, look, we're going to score you how well you did, you know, in working in the class period or how, if they don't do the class, then some of them go to off-season football. And then, we put that in place and we weigh a lot of other things. We had some other ones in there.
Just a lot of things through the whole semester, both semesters, fall and spring, dress code. Are they dressing out appropriately every day of what they need to have for that day, whether it be practice or games? Are they on time all the time? Are they going above and beyond in their skills and practice and what they're supposed to be doing? In a sense, we kind of run it like a college program to where we have high expectations for them that they need to meet all the time. And if they meet those or go above those, then they're going to be considered for a varsity sport. If they're just doing what is asked, then it may need some more work to get to that point. And we have an evaluation at the end of spring ball every year with all our students. Every single one, we have an individual evaluation to tell them their strengths, their weaknesses, what they need to work on over the summer, encourage them to go to camps, encourage them to work on this or whatever. And that seems to help to give them an idea of where they need to go, what they need to get better at in order to achieve what they want to do in here.
And also how they conduct themselves on the field and out of practice and their interactions. Are the one that's going to sit back and watch and wait and let someone else do their job? Or are they going to go out and do their jobs? It's very evident here, if someone's not here, someone's not doing their job, well, the kids here, they're going to call you out. There's a job list posted that our head trainers do, especially during football season. They make it up each week, and it's posted on our bulletin board. And if someone's not there or not doing their job, it's noticed. You know, there may be someone who covers for somebody because they'll say, hey, so-and-so's not here, I'm going to get their stuff for them. That's a lot of things we look at. And at spring ball, the girl in, of course, we only have all girls here, so they're pretty competitive with each other.
Oh yeah.
All right, so Chris, do you have any sort of end of the year evaluation like they were talking about?
Oh well, our evaluation tool is our point system that we have. If they're, and Mike sounds kind of like me. I mean, Arnheim is kind of like the Bible of athletic training. My kids feel the same way, and that's what they call it when they're studying for the quiz bowl. But we expect them to work hard. We expect them to be self-motivated. We treat it like a job. If you're working at Chick-fil-A and you show up late to work or you don't show up, you're going to get fired. That's what's going to happen in our program too. We're going to interview you. You're going to get hired, and if you don't do your job, you're going to get fired. But our evaluation tool is a point system that we use. If they do everything that they're scheduled to do, they get 0 points. That's fine. If you want to do the minimum, you want to get by, that's fine in our program. But there, the majority of our kids are getting extra points by, you know, coming extra early in the morning and helping out, or staying after school and helping out, or anything that we need, or going to, just staying around, sticking around the athletic training room to learn or whatever. You're going to get extra points. In the same way, you'll lose points if you're late or you don't show up. or you break any of our rules, we can take points away. And then at the end of the year, we'll have each week, I guess, we have a Golden Scissors Award winner. We hand out a pair of Golden Scissors to whoever has the most points for the week. At the end of the year, whoever has the most points goes on our perpetual plaque in the athletic training room as the most valuable student athletic trainer. So you're evaluated on a weekly or daily basis. And if you have negative points or you're hanging around that zero, you're probably not going to make it in our program. Either my students will run you out, the ones that'll work, that work hard, or, you're going to leave.
All right, so do you guys continue the scissor program throughout the entire year, or is it just during football?
Just the entire year.
Okay.
We'll use the tool, because we have our blue bus that we have. You've seen it. Our sports medicine bus, we can fit 10 student athletic trainers on with all of our equipment. And so we use that as a tool to see who's going to go to varsity football games with us. This year we have 5 seniors, so they're automatically going to go. And then based on points are going to be who's going to go. A freshman might be going over a junior. If they're working hard and they're there every day, working more than they're scheduled to work, then, yes, I see how hard you're working. I'm going to take you with me to kind of reward you. You're going to go to the varsity game with us. So we have to take 10 students to varsity football games. That's it.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit more about the attendance thing here in just a second. And Alan, do you guys have, at the beginning of the year, I think you said 17 varsity, U17 or varsity football, and that's it? Nobody else can crack that bubble? Or is it a fluid thing that changes week to week or every 2 weeks?
Well, basically what we did is we try to keep it around 15-ish, depending, but it also depends on how well they're working. And if we feel that there's maybe one or two more that we would like to have with us because they've been doing a good job. This year we started with 16, and then at the end of the JVs, the regular season, then we we nominate one JV football trainer to move up to varsity. And basically they're with us for the remainder of the playoffs, and they are now considered a varsity trainer. So that's how we get to 17 for the playoffs. And we didn't mention this before, but during the JV season or during football season, we have our varsity student trainers vote on a trainer of the week. And that's one JV trainer each week that has done a great job with football, attendance wise, helping out, and so on throughout the week. And they get pulled up for the varsity game that week. So it's a reward for them. It also shows them what all goes on the varsity side of things versus JV, since it's obviously a lot more intense and more to do and whatnot. And it gives them a little bit more to work towards than just being out there in the sun every day, standing with water bottles and whatnot. So,
and that being said, their vote isn't the only vote.
Yeah. Of course,
we're going to have a heavy hand in which one. If it's someone who we say that, we have a tutorial system here too. If you have a grade below 70 or below, you have to go to tutorials here athletically on Monday and Wednesday. There's no way around it. And so if a student's been on that, if they're failing or they're on that tutorial list, that's going to hold against them on that. So they may not be selected. Those two could be equal, but that person's having to go into tutorials because, they may have failed that progress. And it's like, you're not going, or you're having to do your grades up, but you're still not going. So you've got to do you've got to do what's right in the classroom in order to succeed in here as well.
All right. So that's the thing with that many girls, and then you're talking about kind of like the seniors or the lead ones voting. How do you avoid that drama or the popularity contest?
Oh, if I could only tell you.
we've had some knockdown dragouts.
It's hard to say. I mean, I try to corral it in a sense of they need to look at it more of a professional way of who does things that they're supposed to be doing on a daily basis. Who's coming in on time? Who's, earning up to the expectations that we have set all the time. It's not a popularity contest. And, when they're out there working together, who's doing a great job? And basically really trying to hit home on that before they do the vote. And then once the votes come in, it's usually pretty close to who we already have in mind as to who we feel has done a great job that year or during that time period to reward them with Trainer of the Week or Trainer of the Year. Our Trainer of the Year is one of our varsity trainers that we present at our football banquet each year, and it's our top varsity football trainer. So it does, there is drama there, especially with the girls, but we try to corral it as best we can. Sometimes it's worse than others, but for the most part, we try to basically tell them, hey, this is like a job. If you get into a career somewhere, you may not like everybody you work with. You may not agree with everybody you work with or whatnot. You need to be flexible. You need to learn how to work with people and different personalities and how things go. And if you're not sure, you need to ask questions. Be, you know, have communication with your superiors and whatnot so we can fix a problem that's happened or, you know, whatever needs to take place to make things run smoothly.
All right, Chris, so while we're on the topic of drama between student athletic trainers, do you have any tips or do you just...
I don't deal with drama. You know, that's my associate athletic trainer. I'm not gonna listen to them. I tell them kind of the same thing that the Allen athletic trainers tell them. It's a job. Any job you're going to get, there's going to be people you don't like. You may not like them, but you have to work with them. We have to accomplish a goal, and it's taking care of these athletes. And so if you can't put that aside, I'm going to get rid of you. Now, my associates might hold me back. We'll talk about it, but I'm not going to deal with it. It's a pain in the butt.
You know, we had this year, it's been a little taxing with this group. There are a good group, but in the beginning of the year, boy, I'm tell you what, they were at each other. And we flat out told them, I said, look, you guys go in that locker room, you better have a come and Jesus me, you better have a resolution to come out of there. Well, I think it just started up more of a hornet's nest because, I mean, they attacked each other. They did everything. There was kids crying. I had one to quit. And I said, get in here. I said, come here. And I said, what's going on? And they said, this is just worse, da-da-da-da. And I said, you're not quitting. I said, you're going to wait 24 hours. You're going to come back here, and we'll talk about it. Well, she's still here. They duked it out again. They got some resolve, and there was something that happened pretty significant.
I don't remember, but
was it one of them? Oh, one of the girls ended up getting kicked out of her house or something and was real upset, left. Well, the girl that attacked her, she ended up her parents are divorced, and it's a long emotional thing with her, but the girl who attacked her in that meeting ended up going and talking with her, and they ended up laying it right out there on the carpet with each other, and we have not had any drama since then. I mean, it's just been that they did bond over that. And so far, after since that time, it's been cohesive. But usually we'll just throw them in the locker room and say, look, you need to duke it out and figure it out because we're not going to deal with this.
No.
I have a question. I know that lately in the media, they've put things out with the girls and how they interact with the football players. And how do you go about like telling them be professional with how you interact with them? Like, do you have rules that they can't date the football players or any other athletes? This is a question for both.
No, we don't. I've never put that rule in. I've never had that when we were in college. We talk to our students about that. Our coaches are very good. We did have some instances here in the past, and bottom line is our players will be kicked off. We've had that before with some that not students dating, but inappropriateness out on the practice field. And our head coach is very adamant about that. He tells them up front, football-wise. Our other coaches are the same way. We'll get involved with it if something occurs. It's usually just one morning with the students and that. Our coaches are very aware of that, and we also talk to our students. And I think education and communication with them is the biggest thing. And if it gets to the point where we're seeing stuff here at the school, I'll go and talk to the player off to the side and say, look, you know, we're not doing this stuff around here, or we'll talk to our students about it as well. I think that's the only really the biggest thing you can do. I don't want to put limitations and parameters on our students.
Right. We don't condone it as well. I mean, I don't condemn it. I don't like it. I let our kids know that I don't like them dating the athletes. I don't like them dating each other. We have a problem with our student athletic trainers dating each other. I let them know that I don't like it because at some point in time you're going to break up and then there's going to be more drama.
Right.
But you know, who am I to say you can't do that? I don't agree with that.
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's like, well, they're teenagers, so they're in love, so they're going to quit athletic training because so that they can date this guy for another 3 weeks, so they can break up. Well, you're in love, so it's just one of those things. It's tough about the dating. You just have to, like both of them have said, teach them that it's a job, it's professional, it's not, you know, I mean, which is really tough for high school kids to figure out what it means to be professional. And to social media is one of the worst things that happened to high school kids. But if you're watching the live stream, there was a comment. There's two or three listeners, and Shakira put it up there. She showed it on the screen on the live stream. But I had the same thing. Is it Casey? What was the last name?
Pyle.
Casey Pyle said that they had a come to Jesus meeting, and then it just. What does it say again?
My students had come to a Jesus meeting one time. Ended up with a bullying complaint.
That's kind of what happened here, is that we're like, okay, we're going to let the kids handle it. Well, then somehow it got to people above me, the administration. It's like, well, I figured high school kids, we could just let them figure it out, handle it themselves. But now that there's all this bullying stuff, anything gets blown out of proportion. So that's one thing I really want to... I was really hoping you guys had an answer for me with 48 girls that you would say, all right, this is the one thing that works every time, but apparently not. So.
I don't, dealing with girls in general, I don't think there is just one sole thing.
I have a question.
You show them tender love and care the whole time. I mean, I treat them as my daughters.
We're the same way. We treat it as a family. We're a family, and we've all got a job to do. You know, and everybody's gonna work together to accomplish that task.
So I've seen the majority of high school athletic trainers being girls. Do y'all have a theory as to why, like, the boys don't want to participate as athletic trainers?
Let's start with Chris.
About one third of our students are boys, and I try to recruit boys. I put on our application. You know, pictures of girls, you know, and sports bras and stuff, and I think sex sells. So hopefully we can get some boys recruited into our program, and it's worked for the most part. But the way we recruit them is if they have we'll go to the eighth grade, to the junior high. They have to have a 85 or higher grade average, and then I'll get a list of addresses for those students. We'll send them an application with a letter of interest from us, and then they'll either, and we get a lot of boys that send the application back. We'll interview them all, and if they're a boy, I can guarantee you they have a better chance of getting in our program.
I would say I kind of lean that way, but here in Pasadena, we're predominantly Hispanic, and it's honestly a macho thing. You know, well, that's all girls. I'm not going to help out the guys kind of thing. So it's changing a little bit. We got two guys now. We had some other guys apply. And so I think having guys in the program is going to help us gain more guys. But whenever I was in high school, it was about half guys and half girls. And I went to Adobe High School here in the same district, but different population, different time. So what do y'all think over there?
Well, I mean, it's hard for us to get, you know, boys in the program. When we do get some in there, they're actually really, really good. You know, we've had a few come through here. None of them want to go on and do athletic training. I've got a couple of dentists, and I've got some who does wildlife management and things like that, but they enjoyed their time. I think our program has become to the point where now it's just pretty much girls who go in there. And then some of it is, if they feel like they quit football or do something else, they just don't want to be around it. We've got, there's so much opportunity here in Allen with so many different programs, they find something else to do. But if you take a look at the profession as a whole, especially the numbers that just came out in the NATA, 53% of the profession is female. I mean, you go back 15 years ago, that number was probably reversed in the program. So it has shifted that females dominate athletic training right now. Now, lifespan of females being in athletic practicing as an athletic trainer are shorter due to family commitments and other things, but just the profession as a whole is female dominated now by 53%.
All right, so we talked briefly about the attendance that essentially what we did last year is we didn't really keep attendance and we didn't have any subjective way to keep track of our kids that were here and they weren't here or they were late and this kind of thing. So whenever we had talked to Chris, about this time last year, he told us that he has a spreadsheet and a point system. And so then we got that from him and I took it and used Google Drive to make a form so that, you know, we can kind of make whatever works here using his thing. And so I think that together, Chris and I are going to be able to create something that works really well for, you know, us here. I don't know what you guys do there. But why don't y'all tell me about how do y'all keep track of who's there? How do y'all keep track of who's earning those extra points?
Well, we have a 3-strike policy anyways here. So you want to explain a little bit about that? And against that, not showing up on time and doing your job will count against you.
Basically, our 3 strikes and you're out is anything that they're doing that is they're repetitively late, they're absent all the time because they have appointments or, you know, various things going on, they're not dressing out appropriately, we'll give them a strike. Grades. If they fail at a reporting period, not a progress, but a reporting period, then they'll get a strike. If they have earned 2 strikes, we're telling them, hey, you're going to have to really work at this to ensure that you don't get a third one, because once they get the 3rd strike, they are basically released from the program. And then they can reapply for the next year, but not until that spring. So say, for instance, they were to get 3 strikes in the fall, they're done until the following fall, assuming that they get accepted again into the program. We don't have to go to that very often. Thank goodness we have a lot of great kids in here and they do a great job. And if they do screw up once, then we don't ever find that they really screw up again. I mean, they learn from their mistake and, you know, we'll pull them in and talk with them. Hey, we can't be doing this for this reason and whatever. We've got to fix this. How are we going to fix this? You know, whatever. And from that point on, it seems to be good. We haven't had to use the 3 strikes unless it's been grades in a very long time, if any, maybe once or twice total since we started that part of our program.
Oh, and one resolution we did too this year after the drama stuff, we put a note on the door that said 7+, and wrote names on there, and our varsity girls were like, well, what does 7+ mean? What does 7+ mean? I'm going, well, basically there's 7+ of you seniors, and I said you guys can be replaced at any time with these names that are on this list. So that's the explanation for it. I said, figure it out real quick. I said, because we've never put this on this window and it's going to stay on this window the rest of the season. And it's been there the rest of the season. And they've, from that point on, that's when they figured it out.
I guess with 77 student athletic trainers, you have the luxury of that. So Chris,
yes.
Chris, in that situation, you're, you know, taking 10 to varsity games. You have 19, which is the most. I don't know that you necessarily have the luxury of, hey, all right, you're fired, you know, just firing kids, because then you have a lot of things that are uncovered. What are your?
Well, we do. I'll fire them. You know, I've done it with 4. When we first opened up, we had 4 students, and I remind them of that all the time. When they start getting on my nerves, I tell them I'll fire them all. I'll do it with 4 like I've done before, and then they usually straighten up. You know, if it gets real bad and they really start making me angry, you know, I'll pull them all out of class, and we'll have a come-to-Jesus meeting right there in the athletic training room. And if they don't straighten up, then I'm going to get rid of them. I find that it works. You know, I think I've come to this point over my career. I didn't used to be like that. I would let them stick around a little longer. And what I found is that it makes it worse. It makes other people start to maybe be lazy or not do their job, and then it just spreads. So I try to nip it in the bud and take care of the problem right away. Because if you don't, then it just gets worse throughout your whole program.
All right, so we'll start with Chris. If we have a kid that isn't doing their job, but they're in our 4th period athletic training period, So we have them in that fourth period. Well, they don't have PE because that's all athletics that period. So what do you do? Because our counselors aren't going to move them mid-semester from athletic training to PE, even though it's still a PE credit. What do you do with those kids that you're wanting to get rid of, but they have to be there because they're in the class?
We've had that situation. You know, if it's the beginning of the semester, you have a better chance of getting them out. If you're talking about the middle to end of the semester, we have to keep them in. We have to keep them in there. They have to keep showing up, and we have to just kind of deal with it. Now we'll make them, you know, make a cold whirlpool or make ice bags and things like that. They still have to work. They're still there. They're still earning a grade, so they're going to have to do some work. We'll have to find something important to do.
All right. What about you guys over in Allen?
I think one of the things that helps us, especially at the end of the day, Maryland started this a while back. We have an EOD, end of the day meetings every day. And it may be just, you know, bullhorning around for a couple of them. But a lot of it is if we see a situation or something needs to be addressed at the end of the day that happened during practice or in school or just to meet on some things that we need to cover, we'll talk about it. And the kids will share their feedback too. You know, so that's helped in that standpoint of trying to squash some things before it gets started. Whether it's a chew session or whether it's a correction or whether it's just providing information to them that they need to know about what's going on.
If we have a situation like that to where we do have to release somebody, but we can't because of scheduling reasons and whatnot, we basically do kind of like what Chris was talking about. You know, they have specific jobs they have to do in that time period that they're in here. And you know, cleaning, bleaching, doing treatments, doing ice bags, that kind of thing, to where they're still participating in the class that they're supposed to be participating in until that time when we can change our schedule.
All right. You guys, anything?
Oh. We have a vast amount of students. How many do you see actually continuing on to college?
We actually have a few that are professional ATCs right now in some of the local high schools around our area. We have a few in college settings right now, one at OU, one at OBU, one at Midwestern State, one at, who else is out? We have a handful of them that are out and about at various colleges. With our seniors, I'd say we have four or five that go into it once they graduate here. So
I'd say total numbers maybe 3%, 2-3%. In all honesty, because others go on, they may find something else in the medical profession. They just may find something totally different. Period. To do, but what we're here to do is provide them a lifelong skill that if they want the opportunity to go into it, they can. What we have found is that our students end up sometimes going backwards and get very frustrated the way the curriculum process is. I mean, our kids hate sitting on the sidelines for 1 year, and then the second year you're basically allowed to only do these things. We had a kid who's at Midwestern State. They started doing that to her, and she's full of spunk and pretty forceful. They made her tape blindfolded. And she flat out did it on them. I mean, she taped an ankle blindfolded and did it better than some of their juniors and seniors they have. I mean, that's how driven this girl is. But we have a hard time with our kids. And some of them will just flat out say, I'm not doing this. I'll find something else to do.
All right. So parent involvement, I think, is a big part of your program probably. Because if you guys are going to a state in football playoffs, you probably have a lot of community and parent support. I know Chris has done a lot of good things with the community, and we talked about that last time. This year was our first year ever to have a mandatory parent meeting. So all of our students, before they could work practice during summer workouts or whatever it was, we had to meet them and their parents. So they had to come up here with their parents so we could just say, hey, this is who we are. Your kids are going to spend a lot of time with us. This is what we expect. You know, if there's any way you want to be involved, let me know, and we can, you know, have you on field trips, or you know, you can come to our parties or whatever, that kind of thing. And so I think that's a good first step for us. But what ways do you encourage, or what is your experience with parent involvement? And we'll go ahead and start with Chris again.
Parents are, it's better if they're not involved, I would say. Now, some of them, they want to be more involved and they want to know what's going on all the time. Usually our freshman parents. But after that, after their freshman year, usually we don't hear from the parents at all. They know that their kids are taken care of with us, and they know that they're going to spend probably more time with us, waking time with us, than they are at home. And I think that the parents, after that first year, is kind of shocked to them as how much time they do spend there, and the parents want to know why or whatever. But after that first year, I usually don't see the parents again until they graduate.
So the thing I have is I want the parents to understand how much time it takes so that they're not like, oh, you need to, you know, why are you not home at 6 o'clock? Well, because it's a game. It doesn't end at 6 o'clock. It ends at 6:30, and then we have to clean up. Or, you know, the parents, I want them to know and to be involved, because I'll sit up here for an hour and a half after practice waiting for parents to come pick up kids. Look, I got a life, too. You know, I want you to know who I am, that I'm not just your kids aren't just here free. We're sitting here waiting on them to be picked up. I need you to come get your kid.
Right.
So that's one of the things that, you know, I think at parent meeting is important, but I just want to know how to improve in parent involvement without making them overbearing. So
I think you're doing it right, though. You let them know your expectations right away. There is no end time. There's a start time to everything. But yeah. I think that's the hardest thing for parents to understand. When can I pick up my kid? Well, I don't know. When practice is done, I guess.
All right, what y'all got?
We used to do a parent meeting until we got so big, and a lot of times it was always the freshman parents that would come in, and because it was new. It was something new that their child was involved in, and we would lay out our expectations. And during our workshop, I hand out about a 9-page handbook of every detail and expectation that we have for all our kids, 9 through 12. We go over it. We take about an hour and a half to 2 hours to go over every single detail and answer all their questions that they have from the very beginning. We have them take it home. Their parents are supposed to read it. Hopefully they do. And then sign it as well. So, and we always have lines of communication anytime any parents want to contact us for anything. During the football season, we don't have a booster club per se, but we have some of our parents have volunteered to be trainer liaisons with our football booster club. And so they've gotten involved with them on a few things, banquet stuff, you know, stuff in the training room, decorations, snacks, that kind of thing. And we've had a good deal with that. One of our parents did an awesome job this year on helping us to get the newscast put on, and that's been a great deal for us. They've been awesome on doing a lot of other things for us this year. So we don't have a lot of parent involvement with the older kids, but always open line of communication anytime they have questions. You know, they want answers. Why is my child up there this long? And we also hit on communication. We tell our kids, look, communication is going to be the biggest key on everything in here. You have to communicate with us. You have to communicate with your parents. You need to let them know that I'm going to be done at this time and that they need to be picking you up at this time for the exact reason you guys just said, that, you know, we have lives too. We want to get home and get to our families and whatnot. And we want to make sure that our kids are getting home too, to their families, and getting their homework done and stuff like that.
Usually about 10 minutes out from a road trip, they're usually calling. Mm-hmm. Now our older ones don't, because they all have, most of them have cars, but on JV trips and that, when they're about 10 minutes out away, we tell them call or text and pick you up. The other thing communication wise is, you know, we post everything on our website for the week. And then we also communicate through Twitter with them, with our students. So, and our parents can follow it if they use Twitter. Otherwise they would have to get online. One of the things our parents do volunteer for is each week, whether it's JV and varsity, they have team dinners on Tuesday nights. So parent involvement, two parents probably get together, whatever, and the varsity girls go, and then the JV girls meet at another person's house, and they organize team dinners, and that's their kind of their team thing that they do for the week outside of having to do a game or something. But as far as parent involvement, it usually tails off by the time they're seniors. And Chris, you're right, you don't see them again until it's senior night and you're saying hi. You know, there are some parents more involved than others.
I'm sure you've got a lot of involvement in your community with those parents.
Sometimes we get too much, and it causes a little mom drama.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, I would like parents to be involved, but I don't want them to be overly involved. And, so like you said, booster club, fundraising, everything falls kind of on me or Bill, to where if we want to raise money, we don't have anybody supporting us. Well, this year from the parent meeting, I had one of my students, her dad said, hey, I own a company. If you need to, if you need me to sponsor something. Well, now we have a t-shirt with his name on the back of it. We got free t-shirts for the kids this year. But that was because of the parent meeting. But then now he's not involved in every single thing we do. But so I think it's a good first step, the parent meeting. So I just want to figure out how to manage that. And maybe for other people, like our two U of H students here, they may be high school student athletic trainers. So just some things you need to think about or consider there. So any other thoughts on what do you have something?
Out of all the aspects of athletic training, the pros, college, clinic, why did y'all choose high school athletic?
Go ahead.
Okay. I chose it just because I played sports in high school. I really enjoyed just the whole atmosphere, the athletics, all that stuff, the friends, the camaraderie, and I wanted to do something in the medical field. So it was a great way to put it together. I don't really care for the travel for professional and college levels. I like being at home. I really like the one high school town we have here. It's a very unique, cool atmosphere, especially on a Friday night or on our Saturday playoff games now. And it's just been great. And it's fun working with the high school kids because you're able to teach them. They're like a clean slate. You're able to teach them and mold them in certain ways, and hopefully that they soak it in and they enjoy it as well and go on to bigger and better things, regardless if it's athletic training or not. I've only worked at Allen. I've only, been in a high school setting, so I can't necessarily say this is the best out of all of them, but it's all I know, so I really enjoy it.
I've worked in all three that you mentioned. I've been in the clinical setting. I've been at the college level and now at the high school level. And for me in the clinic, I liked it. I liked working with the general population, but I really wanted to work more with athletes and the athletic trainers are limited in a physical therapy clinic. So I worked back at the college that I had graduated from, and the travel eventually got to me. I mean, I loved working with the athletes, but the time commitment, it's 7 days a week. You're playing football on Saturday. You're doing two treatments on Sundays. You're on the road. I went straight from football to women's basketball. And again, you're playing on Saturday, you're traveling home or flying home on Sunday. And I wanted to start a family. So shortly after I got married is when I came here to Allen. And I haven't regretted it at all. I love it here. And just like we've said, we run it like a college program. It was not any different. We actually had a student that had graduated from here at Allen that was a student of mine at the University of North Texas. And as soon as she started taping, we looked at her and went, where did you go to high school? Because she knew exactly what she was doing. And when I came here and was on staff here at Allen, I can see why. They run it like a college program. And it was an easy transition for me. And I haven't regretted it at all. I really like working at this setting. And again, me working with the freshmen, it's nice because like Marilyn was saying, they're a clean slate. Something simple as teaching taping and things like that is really fun with them. And they're just little sponges and they soak everything up. And I love that aspect.
For me, I've done several. I worked in a clinic when I was in college. And to me, working in the clinic I learned a lot. There's a lot. I used to do one of my favorite things is Whirlpool debridement in wound care because we're a full fledged clinic when I was in Wichita Falls, and we did everything, cardiac care, all of it. The problem is you're limited in there just by the population itself. You can't do things with general population people that you can do things with athletes. Sometimes you can experiment on athletes and they'll soak it up and it'll be successful. You just can't do that in the general population. So the positives to it though, and when you're in a clinic is you can be 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or however they structure their hours. But you're going to be paid differently in there, and you're going to be limited on what you want to do. Work semi-pro baseball. It's a rough life. You're gone. You're on the bus, you're gone for 2 or 3 days in a hotel, maybe back, could be gone out a week, and it's brutal. Your whole sleep patterns, everything else are just thrown off because you're playing ball at night. You may go eat dinner after the game, then you're sleeping in till about 11. All of a sudden they got to be back at the park for hitting practice at this time, and you're trying to do treatments on the road or back at your own place. And I had a job offer with the Steelers, not the Steelers, the Pirates organization in minor league baseball. And it was something, I had young kids, and it's like, why? You know, for 8 months out of the year, you're going to be on the road and an opportunity to go to Mexico and do all this other stuff. And, you know, you got per diem and that, but you never see your family. That's the whole deal. It's 7 days a week in pro sports. And you never, ever hardly get to see your family, depending on the time of year. So high school with me has been a great fit. You know, look, it's 10, 11 months out of the year. And you do get your time off. You can create your time off. You just have to put your foot down and say, look, you know, you're not going to tread on my time. That's important. That's valuable. I've done it, and being in the high schools allowed me to do other things. I've traveled internationally, worked internationally as an athletic trainer during my times off. And that's been a huge plus and benefit to be able to do that. But working with the high school athletes is just, you know, I left high school for 4 years to get my degree, and I came back. You know, that's the way I kind of put it. And to help maybe mold and shape someone to go into this profession or lead them into a profession that's very similar in the medical field or something they want to do is very rewarding. And it's especially rewarding to see your young athletes. We had one who played football, wasn't very good. All of a sudden, he goes through. I see him at the regional track meet at Tech, and he's going through the program. And I said, what mate led you? And he said, just by what you guys do. And that's how I got into it. You know, I got in. I was an athlete, had some injuries, didn't want to get a study hall after my senior year of football. Our athletic trainer, nothing limited him. His name is Ray Winkles. He's probably about 4'2", maybe. You know, probably the shortest guy in athletic training, I can tell you that. And he said yes. And I taped an ankle on the second try and asked me how I did it. And I said, I just watched you for 3 years and went on from there. And so the profession to me has been very rewarding. It is time. Understand this, you at the high school, you are going to put your hours in. There is not an end time. You are going to put your hours in, and you're done when the job's done or when that athlete is treated, you know. You're going to be asked to do things that you may not. Are you kidding me? You know, other duties, you know, but there are things that you will have to draw the line on and put your foot down to save your own time and sanity, because family is important to you. We all have families. Mine are older. Theirs are younger. But we all work together to get the common goal, and that's to get our job done and to get those athletes prepared and our coaches to understand as well. But I don't think I would, you know, high school is where I want to be.
Same deal here. I going through college, I wanted to work pros. I got my internship with the Texans, and then I was like, wait, this is not what I was thinking. This is not what I expected. And, you know, during training camp, you're literally sleeping at the hotel. And, you know, Kevin Bastien was the athletic trainer at the Texans Inn. He had an air mattress. He slept in the athletic training room because he didn't want to go home. Because he didn't want to drive 45 minutes home, 45 minutes back every day or whatever. And I'm like, it's ridiculous. You know, it was nice because I was getting paid by the hour. It was like 100 hours a week. So, you know, 60 hours of overtime or whatever it was. But for my whole life, it's just not what I expected. And I'm extremely thankful to Bob Marley for the internship, but I just realized, hey, this is not what I want. And, you know, here at the high school, I have a greater impact on kids' lives, you know. And so that was the best part for me, is the impact on in affecting people's lives for a long time, you know. So, all right, let's talk about community involvement. Chris does. We talked last time about you had a great big hot dog thing, and then the mayor threw out the first pitch at a baseball game, and so you're getting a lot of community involvement, and I know your doctors do your physicals for free so that you get that money to use for your students, or you buy them their clothes and that kind of thing. What are some of the things there that you do to help improve the perception of the community of student athletic trainers and of athletic training?
You know, we're always promoting ourselves wherever we're at in the community, at our school, and your students do the same thing. They're a direct reflection of your program and your school. So what we want to and I and our kids know that they are. If they're out in the community, whether they're wearing our sports medicine gear or not, they need to act appropriately, because there is somebody that's going to know them, and somebody that's going to tie them back to our school and to our program. So we want to look good at all times. In ways we get involved in the community is I'll call up our congressman's office, or I'll call the mayor's office, or send a letter and talk to their assistants and have them come out. If they're out in the community supporting us, then it just makes us look that much better. Our state representative, like you're saying, throwing out the first pitch, I contact multiple people because you don't know who's going to say yes or no. They have other arrangements or whatever. So I had two people say yes a couple years ago. It was our state congressman and our state representative and our U.S. congressman. And so I had brought them out for baseball and softball pitch, throwing out the first pitch at the same time. So we kind of had to be at two places at once, and we do our free hot dog night. We advertise that in the community, and we have a big hot dog eating contest that our transportation director won this past year, and he'll have to come back this March for National Athletic Training Month and compete, and we'll get hopefully some big guys competing in our hot dog eating contest. I had one school board member in it this last year in the hot dog eating contest. So when the junior community sees that and that they support the athletic trainers, it just makes you look good.
Again, those are things that I'm working on, trying to do those things. So I really appreciate the last time we talked and just the ideas being refreshed. So over there in Allen, what do you guys do to make sure that the community knows who you are, that they appreciate? Do you treat community members or the school board members, those kind of things? And what do you guys do there?
Well, one thing that our football program has in place that we've done for a number of years now is Reading with the Eagles. And basically what that is our players and our student trainers and I believe some of our cheerleaders, they go to the elementary schools each week. There's two elementary schools per week throughout the football season that our kids go to and read with those kids. And those elementary kids look forward to that. When it's their school, they are super excited. We have the tunnel out there with them, and our captains speak with them, and they go into the individual classrooms and read with them. And our girls are going in with their polo shirts on and explaining what they do. And, of course, the kids aren't really aware at the time, but once our girls explain, hey, we do this on the sidelines. We help help players with injuries and talk about it with that, it gets – those kids familiar with what our job is on the field and basically promotes what we do. So it's been a really good program overall for Allen ISD.
And we've had a few kids as a result of that. Mm-hmm. That's where they've first been introduced to it. And that's where, one of the reasons they applied was because of Reading with the Eagles. And sometimes, we have a couple of bilingual student trainers here, so we've got a few schools that are ESL, and so it's usually that student that gets put in there with them too. One of the biggest things, like you said, Chris, they're representing our community, so anytime they're wearing the school mm-hmm. colors or anything with sports medicine on there, they are representing Allen, and they wear their clothes with pride because, number one, they have to pay for them, and number two, they are part of this community, and this is a one horse town. There's only 32 square miles of Allen, and it's not very big. And so if something happens, people in this town are going to know about it, or it's going to look back on your program. One thing I can say is I'll have parents or people I don't even know. It's like, man, watching your girls perform on Friday night is just unbelievable. I said, what do you mean? He said, the way they run out. I mean, they treat every game like it's their own game when they're on the timeout game. They play them, whether that other team's playing or not on the timeout game, man, them girls are just gone out there. And if our coaches ask for water, hey, girls, it's timeout game. Get out there. And so, I mean, it pushes them. So, the community sees that and sees them. But our big community involvement is Reading with the Eagles. Our kids do volunteer on their own. With other things, we have a lot of kids who do sign up for PALS and want to be involved in PALS. We have some who do their own volunteer work outside of here, whether it's volunteering at a hospital or whether they're working with special needs kids as well. They do a lot on their own here in Allen.
All right, so as you were talking about that, Chris, why don't you tell them about your rivalry game and the belt?
And you can. There's a picture of it on our. We have our athletic training Twitter site is at DHS_AT.
Okay.
You can see a picture of our belt. Well, we do our athletic student athletic trainers do kind of the same thing. They when it's a timeout or end of the quarter, they sprint out there, and they're trying to beat the other team, and they feel like they beat the other team, and they get on the bus and they're excited and pumped. Well. Our other high school in our district, Pearland, we had a competition with them. This was the first year we played each other, so we competed against their student athletic trainers, who could get the most referees water at timeouts and end of quarter. And we had a unbiased party judge. Each official, or we only used the three officials in the middle. The white hat, the head official, was worth 2 points, and the other two were worth one. So the winner, whoever got the most points at the end of the game, I ordered a championship or like wrestling belt. We put some custom stuff on it, and gets to keep it for the year. So the next year we'll do the same thing, and we'll play for the belt.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to find out more about the point system and kind of how that worked. We'll let it play off for a couple years, and then we'll do that because after we played you, our guy Matthew, he was here in our game versus Rayburn. Like he was running out there, and one of the girls from Rayburn, which is our rival school, was going out there, and so then he just took off sprinting, and he literally cut her off and stepped in front of her with like two steps to go before the ref, just because he didn't want to lose, because they were like, man, at Dawson they were sprinting out there, that kind of thing, and so it's just fun, you know, that kind of thing. If we can create that excitement throughout the year. And, you know, I love it. I love it.
Well, that's what our kids, they always want, because I tell them, you know, because they don't know that not every school does that. And we're new to your district this year.
Right.
So I say, you know, it's going to take them probably a quarter to figure that what they're trying to do out, what we're doing out. And then they're going to be, it's going to be kind of a fight out.
Right.
There. But yeah, they're always cutting each other off. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's fun. So
I'll tell you what, the one that chaps my hide is that other person coming over to our sideline, getting the referee on our sideline.
Well, that's what our kids, that's their whole goal.
Girls, that's, if that ever happens again, you're fired.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen again. I grabbed one of our girls. I just threw him out. I said, you get that guy right there.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Our kids will come over, high five. They get that other official on the sideline, and they are pumped.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So you guys mentioned that your kids pay for your clothes. Last time Chris mentioned that he pays for them because of, you know, the physicals, the fundraiser, that kind of thing. One of the things is that he gets to take those clothes back if he fires a kid or a kid quits, then those kids can no longer wear his stuff. So how do you guys and Alan deal with that?
Well, basically, when we do our application process and we have our team or whole program set in the spring, we give them a clothes package to purchase. And basically it has their practice t-shirts and shorts, their game polo, warm-ups, if we get warm-ups, maybe a bag, and various things that they'll use throughout the entire school year at all the different sports. They purchase it from one of our local shops here in town that's a spirit wear shop, and that's what they use. So they have it for themselves. It's not something that's checked out to them and whatnot for any time they use anything. With our fundraisers that we do throughout the year, we will take that money and purchase the heavy jackets like the parkas and maybe
scarves.
Different bags or scarves or some other thing that we need that we will check out to them. It's mainly the heavy jackets that are the pretty expensive ones, or we'll get other various things with that fundraiser money for them. So
one thing we quit doing, we don't do physicals anymore as a fundraiser.
Yeah.
That was something we ran into an issue here with a student who ended up being one of our student athletic trainers, had a heart issue. She fell out on the volleyball court as a freshman, and it's called ARVD. It's atrial ventricular defibrillation, where the right ventricle becomes very, very thin. It happens about 2% of the population, and these patients usually die. But it's usually seen in the Mediterranean with Italians and Greeks. where it's common. And most of the time it happens with soccer players, and their whole ventricle area just blows out and they die on the field. And this young lady, they got through winning a point. She walks up, they congratulate, she turns around, walks back to serve, and collapses. Well, she ended up being one of our students. And it's also hereditary is what it is. One of the parents carries a hidden gene. And so she ended up being one of our student trainers the whole time in here. And so that kind of led to, okay, we need to do EKGs. We need to do this. We need to do that. I said, no, we're not doing that. I said, I'm not doing what they, I talked to Cyfair and that. And I said, look, that's just added stuff on me. That's another liability that we've got to handle. I said, I'm not doing that. So me, my athletic director, superintendent, talked to Dr. Miller, who's a sports medicine physician with Children's, and Dr. Scott, who's the head of pediatric cardiology at Children's, about what the best way to go about it. And he took, Dr. Scott ended up being the treating physician on my student in that scenario. And basically he said, what you need to do is get away from doing mass physicals. He said, that's first and foremost. And the reason is, he said, we want more encouragement for them to go see someone in a controlled setting to where you can catch a lot of these issues with the heart and that, because it is hard in a mass setting to hear. And some of our physicians will say that. And so that's one thing that's gone away from us, is we don't do those fundraisers anymore. The fundraisers we've gone to is Cincy. We sell Eagle cards with our football program. Well, the whole athletic department sells Eagle cards, which is, you know, you get a card with all these different savings and discounts to local restaurants and stuff. But to finish up that, the one story on that was basically the physicians basically said, he said, the best case scenario is to have a reactive plan to it. Have your AEDs in place and have your emergency action plan to take action. He said, you can never go wrong with that, because each student, if you do EKG testing on them 1 year, they're going to change the next year. You're never going to pick them all up, you know, until they mature in adults, and you're still no guaranteed. So we don't do physical. And let me tell you something, we made quite a bit of money off that thing too. I mean, we made, you know, $7,000 to $8,000 a year off of that. Usually what happens is we'll do our fundraisers of selling Cincy or something of that nature, and usually we'll get donations from the Touchdown Club. We'll make a donation to us or whatever.
So you guys just make a package available, or do you say you have to have this to?
We have two packages. The freshmen get one package, and in the varsity or JV at the high school level get a different package. It's usually a little more involved.
They have minimums to purchase, such as their T-shirts and their game polo, and then we have optional extra stuff to purchase, such as a bag or warm-ups or whatever. But we tell them, you know, you have to have the game shirt, you have to have the practice shorts and T-shirts, and everything else is optional. So it's up to them on what they want to purchase after that.
And we tell them, look, if you guys want to wear warm-ups jackets for a game or whatever, you all have to match. So if one of them doesn't have it, they either got to borrow it from somebody or, you know, you purchase it.
Chris, you have any other thoughts on the
No, I like it. That's pretty professional looking, you know, real uniform. I like that.
And they have to wear khakis. That's a non-negotiable. It's khakis. The only time they get to wear the warm-ups and that is if we're doing an indoor tournament. It's all day long, and wrestling, we host a regional wrestling tournament, so we'll let them wear their warm-ups during that time. And then if it's all day long basketball tournaments or something, and they're working it and they're going to be there all day, we'll let them be comfortable with that. But if it's game time or if their outdoor sport dictates that, but otherwise they're going to be in khakis and a polo.
All right. So, just recently in the last couple of years, like we acquired this classroom, which is where we're doing this podcast, I really just came in and started moving stuff around and had my class in here. And then, you know, we got lockers for our kids from the warehouse. They were throwing them away, and there's a downstairs girls restroom, but we have 30 kids at most, at the very most. You guys have 77 kids. How do you have, guys have your own student athletic trainer locker room? Do they have to use an athletic locker room? Do you have your own, tell me how that works there.
They use their cars
yeah,
for the most part.
Basically, with Che has 13 freshmen over there, so they'll use the athletic.
We have a PE locker room where they have their own section of lockers that I assign to them that they use. So we're in a little bit different setting over there because they don't quite have the access over here.
We don't have the locker space over here, right. And so we'll have storage space for their bags in the back. We offer to lock their stuff up in here in the office if it's valuable, something like that. They have their cars. They use the athletic locker rooms to change and whatnot, but we don't necessarily have a specific locker room. We're hoping still that maybe we can get a renovation someday for our weight room that's in here, since we have the new big weight room in our stadium that's
all cracked up,
fixed. But if that ever happens, then we have plans to hopefully put a small locker room in there for them. If anything with cubbies and stuff like that they can have their stuff
in.
And
here's one thing. Our school is a little different. We have two start times and two end times. Kids are very transient here. They may have two classes a day. It's because they may have Quad C. They may be taking dual credit classes, or they just may have two classes and then athletic training, because we're on a modified block schedule here. Whereas athletics is outside the main two athletic periods. We have a first and an eighth period, and then your block, you're in the center of it. So, kids are coming and going. That's why I say their cars, because a lot of them will leave be changed and already be here and leave their stuff in their car. That's one of the things when they purchase their bags, they use them constantly. But we're not a part of the high school itself. We are not attached to it. Our field, we're across the street, literally probably about 800 yards away from there. Our students who are in the gym, who are with volleyball and basketball and that, they have places in the training room and they can go change in that and keep their bags. But over here, we don't. We have we basically kind of share around us. Behind us is the ice machines and our washer and dryers, and then down the sides, we've commandeered the hallway on the sides. Well, that's basically where the lockers get stuffed for players to get their practice gear. Well, there's like 400 lockers, there's 300, maybe even 600, 300 on each side, and those aren't all being used. So we just commandeer a certain section where they can keep their practice stuff and shoes and their fanny packs and things like that in that area. But most of them, the older ones who drive, they keep their stuff in their car and they'll come here to rest, or they'll take them and put it back out in the car.
Chris? We have a locker room. Now we have a whole lot less kids, and they have lockers in there. It's a pretty small room. They take turns, the girls and boys take turns changing clothes in there, or we have a bathroom in the athletic training room too, they'll change in there. Is that it? Just lockers, locker room? Where are they changing clothes? Or?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of the logistics of handling, how you manage the kids and that kind of thing. Obviously with 77 kids, it's a lot different than with 10 or 20 kids.
How do you keep all those student athletic trainers busy and not getting bored?
Well, with only having, let's see, we've got 17.
Football, going so long in football helps quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, varsity football, obviously, still busy. JV football right now are in their second sport. So some of them may already be with basketball and busy with those sports across the street at our gyms. Some are busy with soccer in the other period. So they're out doing stuff for soccer and whatnot. During our eighth period athletic period with our kids that aren't in football and aren't in a sport right now, a lot of it right now is basically catching up on grades that they may not have had great success with during the football season because they've been so busy, or it's practicing various things, getting ready for the spring, getting ready for their sport in the spring, kind of just soaking up stuff just during that athletic period. So they're not in here a lot. But, still helping with treatments and stuff like that, still helping, practicing taping, practicing wrappings. If we have an injury that comes in during that period, or we're treating somebody during that period, we have them help out during that time period. So we don't have all 77 in with us in this training room at one time, thank goodness. they're kind of spread out everywhere. She's got five of our kids over at the freshman center because our wrestling mats are over there right now since they can't be in the stadium. So she has five of our older kids over with her to help her out. We've got a bunch of other kids over at the gyms with Chris Brock that help out over there. So it's manageable. Sometimes it's organized chaos, but it works somehow.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I watched the video again. It was at USA Today, USA News, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was WFA is our local ABC channel that came out and did the story.
Yeah. So again, that's pretty cool. I got a link to it in the show notes here. And it's just really cool for athletic training in general to see that kind of publicity and then to see what you guys are doing there. It's just about the time to end. Do you guys have any final questions as you're considering high school as your potential career path?
No, but thank you for all the insight. It's because it'll take us maybe a year and a half left. We have a year and a half left to decide, and it sounds like the high school setting is a happy medium.
If you do work high school, one of the biggest things to work with is communication. I mean, it resolves a lot of issues, but it also helps a lot. I mean, it will help you tremendously how to communicate. It's one thing that it's not ever taught. Okay. You just pretty much have to learn it. And some people don't ever learn it, but communication with your coaches is very, very key. And communication, you know, we don't have to, but your students and parents and convey it to them. And that will help you out a lot because there are going to be some nuances you're going to deal with. You're going to have to deal with athletic insurance. So that's a little nuance that's not truly taught, but communication is very, very, very big here, whether it's through social media, whether it's through email, whether it's through just picking up the telephone. Sometimes we've gotten so big, we used to call on every injury, and we just can't do that anymore. We may send home a note with them and that and say, look, you need to come at this time, and the kids do that. But, you know, we relay everything to our coaches and let them know what's going on. But communication is going to be is big. Organization and communication is going to be your biggest asset.
I did have one random question. Do y'all prefer 1.5-inch or 2-inch tape when you tape?
Well, with our kids, they're smaller, so I think I prefer 1.5. When I was in college working basketball, you know, 2-inch tape for a big foot, you cover a lot of ground with mm-hmm. that. But
we used to use 2-inch. Matter of fact, I had one of the students that came out from us when Che was at North Texas. She used 2-inch tape. We used to use it quite a bit because we used to have some, you know, I'd have 7-footer here and stuff like that, and I would keep some of it around. She almost exclusively loved 2-inch tape. But what do you do with that little girl who's got a little foot? It's hard, so you can't go exclusive with it. So pretty much the happy medium is 1.5-inch. That's what we stay with. If we're going to go any bigger, it's usually going to be in the stretch tape and that going forward. But generally 1.5-inch is what we're going to stay with.
I think, you know, the whole segment on athletic training programs, it's a family, you know. These kids will be with you for four. They'll come in. They'll be with you for 4 years. They spend more time with you than their own families. They help do things in the community with us. We try to reward them. We have parties different times a year. Before school starts, we have an in-service for a week for half the day, and the other half of the day we go out and go to Kima, or we go to do something fun, roller skating, bowling, whatever. In the middle of the year, we have a Christmas party. We adopt a family. We're all in this together. We're all trying to take care of our athletes. And at the end of the year, we have another party. And at one of those parties, we do have laser tag guns, by the way, that we will we'll play our rival school, Pearland, in laser tag at one of the parties. Usually before school starts, we'll go. This year, we were on their campus. Last year, we were on ours and compete in laser tag. So I think what I like about high school and what you can take away from this, whatever you want, but I feel like it's more of a family, and I'm the first athletic trainer most of our junior high athletes see, or parents even hear of an athletic trainer, or even some of our high school kids or parents, and I can make an impression on them that will last them, you know, a lifetime. It's like, and we can teach these kids life lessons, whether they do athletic training or not. They're going to walk away with a stronger work ethic, and they'll know how to take care of people, how to listen to people. I think awesome athletic trainers, your show segments should be, it's just it's a family. I feel like if you can create a family atmosphere, you're going to have an awesome athletic training program.
Yeah, we like you're saying, life skills. I've never personally done first CPR, but I've had four students, one of each of the last 4 years, perform CPR or the Heimlich maneuver, the back blows, abdominal thrust, to somebody in their family, in their community. You know, some of them, they didn't make it. Some of them, they did. But because we taught them the skill here in athletic training, that they were able to use that outside in their house. And, you know, so it's just, like you're saying, a life skill, something they're 14, 15 years old, and they're something that you just have a lasting impact. So, and so it's definitely, I feel like we're doing more of creating a family here, creating, you know, doing the Christmas party coming up next week and those kind of things. And I don't have the picture up, but we went and had a end of summer football barbecue over at the park at the splash pad, had water guns, water balloon fight, and all that kind of stuff, just creating the environment and the family, and just it's more lasting. So
there are going to be times where they fight each other.
Yeah.
And there's going to be that drama, especially with all the girls that Alan has. Like, I can't believe you don't have any guys. How is that even possible? I would want to be the one student athletic trainer guy in your program. I mean, you can rule the roost.
Yeah. Yeah. So
one thing kind of going off on what Chris was saying is, for me, for high school, I remember my coaches like it was yesterday when I was in high school. And so I try to model what we do and what I do with our kids of teaching them those life things of, you know, they may not be athletic trainers. They may go on to be a CEO of a company or whatever, you know, but to work with each other, to work with different personalities and different people, to be proud of what they are and where they come from and who they are and their family and whatnot, and to where, you know, whatever they do, that they're going above and beyond everything. And, you know, some may agree with how we do things. Some may not. Some want to be a part of this because they want to be a part of a team. Some want to be a part of this because they want to go on in athletic training. But I will always want it to be a positive situation for them, to where they can be successful in whatever they decide to do, that they're taking something out of here that they've learned, and be a positive role model for them down the road in whatever they do.
And they'll come back and tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're out practicing, because we've already had it. You know, they said, now I know what you guys experienced. I said, yeah, she's on the other foot, isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had one episode where I talked to my buddy, my best friend, still my best friend, that we caused some trouble in high school. And so actually Chad Jones, he was used to be at Pearland there. He was my head athletic trainer at Adobe my senior year. And just the dumb things we did, just one, because we were high schoolers, but two, like, just to kind of irritate, I'm like, why did I do these things? And I understand why they would say, don't waste the tape. Don't make nunchucks with tape. You know? So, because, well, we have to pay for it, but also, you know, it looks bad. And so, yeah, we're shoes on the other foot. I understand now, but, you know, it is what it is. So, all right. Any final thoughts, questions before we close it out? No, no. All right. So, great conversation. I'm really pleased to have both you here to help teach me, and then the people who are eventually going to replace me in the profession, to talk about ways to make this thing good. So, Chris, thanks for being here. Alan, ISD, I thank you guys for joining us. GHATS, the Greater Houston Athletic Trainers Society, sponsors the CEU opportunities for this. So, I know Casey Powell, listening in, registered. If you want the CEU opportunity, you got to make sure you fill out the evaluation form on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and then it'll give you the password to the CEU certificate area. We can download your CEU certificate. So you can only get the CEUs for participating in the live event. We can't do it for the recorded one, but if you're listening to this recorded later, you can follow us almost every Wednesday for the live events. We don't do them over the breaks because this job is pretty tough to do by myself without the students. Again, the website there, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, almost every single Wednesday. I'm on Twitter at @PHSSportsMed and using hashtag DSMB. You can comment to us whenever my students are here. Chris is @FABU_AT. His school is DHS_AT, correct? And then Alan is AHS underscore sports med. Sports medicine? Sports med.
Sports med.
Sports med. So you can connect with any of them on Twitter. Again, Chris tweets out stuff that he's doing, taking kids to surgery or, you know, with the picture of his belt or news stories of the Allen ISD. So definitely check those out. They're a better resource than me, and that's why I bring them here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So for Jeremy, everybody there in Allen, Chris there in Dawson, my future in U of H Masters of Athletic Training Program, that's a wrap.